Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nyman Show. Today is Saturday, September 10th, 2016. This is a supplement to our earlier broadcast. This evening, we're just going to talk about some of the sequences and what's going on in Singapore and some of the other issues that are going on with Zika. So for this, we go to Dr. Nyman. Dr. Nyman, welcome back to the program.
Well, thanks, Ryan. It hasn't been nearly as long this time as it was for this afternoon's. And, I think the reason we're going to do this is I'm going to talk about sequences. There was a series of sequences. They're partial sequences, but they're enough to get an idea of what's going on outside of the Americas, in part because of the outbreak in Singapore. The Singapore outbreak has dramatically increased the number of local cases there and to well over 300 in just over a week. And there are several clusters that are there, and it's got almost half of the city's already covered. And there have been some comparisons being made between the Zika in Singapore versus the Zika in the Americas. And so I thought it would be useful to really discuss the virus somewhat from its history and its the sequence point of view, which goes a long ways towards figuring out what virus is doing what. And and some of these differences that are widely cited, may very well be differences between getting the result based on testing and comparing it to a negative result based on no testing, and thinking that the virus is tested is dramatically different than the virus that isn't tested. So just to give an overview, the Zika virus was originally identified in Uganda, and it came out of the Zika forest, hence its name. That happened in 1947. Some of the early studies that were done in the early 50s, like 1952, took the virus that was isolated in 1947, infected mice, and then I'll look to see where the virus was found after the infection, and the results of those 1952 studies showed that it was found almost exclusively in the mouse brain. And so it was neurotropic back in 1947. A lot of the initial isolates of the virus were in Africa, and actually you were in mosquitoes, which is how it was first identified. It was studies on yellow fever, and they were basically catching mosquitoes and testing them, and found this Zika virus, which is a flavivirus, and actually is related to the yellow fever virus. Two other viruses that are fairly widespread now are both dengue and chikungunya. The West Nile virus is also in this flavivirus group, and so they're all kind of related to each other. But the Zika virus did emerge in Asia, and one of the earliest sequence was in 1966 in Malaysia, and that virus phylogenetically was a little bit different. And just to go through this, the virus can be isolated and sequenced. The sequences can then be compared to other viruses. The coding region of the virus is 10,272 base pairs. That's how many letters are in the entire region that goes from the first start codon to the termination codon. And then that large protein is chopped up into, that polyprotein is chopped up into smaller proteins to form the virus. The size of the virus is unchanged. The 1947 was 10,272 base pairs. the virus in 2016 is the identical number, 10,272 base pairs. So it's very straightforward to take the sequence from 1947 and the sequence from 2016 and compare them along with all the sequences in between. And, you know, what first was identified early on was this version out of Malaysia was really somewhat different than the sequence out of Africa. And so that gave rise to the African strain and the Asian strain. Not much was really done with the African strain. It was, in Africa, but not that much research was ongoing in Africa. The Asian strain didn't really draw a lot of attention for human cases until it was in the Yap Islands in Micronesia in 2007. There was a human outbreak. And the one that has caused the most interest and concerns was a second outbreak also in a island country, French Polynesia, and that happened in 2013, end of 2013 and into 2014. That virus, at the time, from the sequence point of view, there wasn't a whole lot of information up until a few months ago. There was, in fact, only one complete sequence. That virus actually had a lot in common with the current virus. There were travelers to French Polynesia, which is the those people got infected. They traveled back to countries like the Netherlands or the United States or Japan or France, and then they showed symptoms, and the virus was identified. And in fact, the only full sequence that was public up until a few months ago was the virus that was actually isolated from a traveler from France who had gone to Tahiti and got infected and developed symptoms back in metropolitan Paris. In any event, that particular sequence was of interest because after the outbreak in French Polynesia, there was another outbreak on Easter Island, which is owned by Chile. And unfortunately, there were a lot of sequences out of Easter Island, but they were relatively short and just over one small region of the virus, so that was enough to say that it was, the Asian strain, and it was also enough to show that it was very closely related to the French Polynesia strain. And some of the interest in French Polynesia was generated when the virus kind of jumped to the Americas. Most of the attention for the virus happened when it moved into Brazil. In the Northeast region in particular, there were a large number of cases. It was officially recognized that the Zika was causing this illness with a rash and muscle aches and conjunctivitis. As the Zika virus, that was in May of 2015. But after Zika was identified then, samples that were collected as early as March of 2015 were tested, and they were found to be Zika positive. And so from a sequence standpoint, the earliest sequences in Brazil were in March of 2015. The virus took off in the Northeast, and about 6 months after it first was described in Brazil, cases of microcephaly began to appear in Northeast Brazil. And And the local physicians, you know, there was little doubt in their mind that the number of cases was dramatically elevated over background, and that they eventually came to the conclusion that the microcephaly cases were due to the Zika outbreaks. And the epiterms were, if you compare when Zika appeared and when microcephaly appeared, there was a six-month lag. And the reason there was a six-month lag is because the microcephaly cases were due to infections in the first trimester. So women that were infected back in the spring of 2015, those that were in the third trimester then gave birth over the next 3 months. So in the spring of 2015, they were giving birth to babies who did not have microcephaly. And then over the summer, women that were affected in the second trimester back in the spring gave birth, and those babies also didn't have microcephaly. But the women that were infected in their first trimester in the spring gave birth beginning in the fall, and that's when the microcephaly began to appear. So just the epicurves alone pretty much targeted the first trimester as the time period when the Zika infections led to microcephaly. Subsequent studies indicated that there could very well be additional problems with infections in the second and third trimester, but microcephaly wasn't one of those problems, and that's why the babies gave the appearance of being healthy at birth, at least with regard to head size or potential eye problems, which were also associated with those earlier infections, as well as various structural changes in the brain. And so their brains looked normal, and it was only the first trimesters that had the issues. Tying it to Zika was a little bit difficult because by the time the babies were born, generally they had cleared the virus. Eventually the virus came under control, but the damage had already been done. So the brains were smaller, the skulls were collapsed, there was excess skin over the skull because the skulls had collapsed. And you know, there were major issues with regard to the microcephaly, but actually finding the Zika virus in these full-term babies was a bit of a challenge. Turns out that there was an assay that was developed that did allow the detection of the virus. It wasn't the virus itself, it was the virus's antibodies. It was an IgM assay, and it was done with the cerebral spinal fluid that was collected right after birth. And the benefits of the cerebral spinal fluid in the IgM assay is that the IgM molecule is 2.5 times bigger than the IgG. It's got 5 chains instead of 2 chains. And as a result, it doesn't really cross the placenta. So the IgM that's in the baby's spinal fluid is actually antibodies that were made by the baby. So that's an indication that the baby was infected, and actually also an indication that the baby's neurological space was infected. And that assay then gives conclusive evidence that this baby was infected in utero, and the virus did get into the neurological space. Now, the problem with that assay, of course, is that you need to collect the cerebral spinal fluid. So the initial cases were babies that had already been born previously, and they hadn't collected any samples. And so they could define the Zika infection radiologically, that the virus literally creates holes in the brain, which are then filled in with calcium. And so they have these calcium deposits. There are various structural changes in the brain. So if there's an MRI, and there's radiological evidence of what the brain looks like in the baby shortly after birth, they can come to the conclusion at a minimum that there was a viral infection, and at a maximum, based upon various characteristics, they can conclusively or relatively conclusively say that it was due to the Zika infection. As more babies were born, more cerebral spinal fluid was collected, and there was more confirmations that the babies with these characteristic changes in their brain did have the Zika IgM antibodies. They had been infected in utero with Zika, and the epicurve, you know, indicated that it was the babies that were infected in the first trimester. It also causes miscarriages, and there was some data on women that had miscarriages. They looked at the tissues from the miscarriage, and again, they could find, in those cases, they could actually find the Zika virus, because these were cases that miscarried relatively early in the pregnancy, around the 20th month, and at the 20th month, the virus was still active in the baby. There was actually some data that allowed an indirect test that in some cases there was so much virus in the brain of the babies that they actually spilled out in the mother's serum. So instead of becoming negative about a week after they were infected with the Zika viruses, these mothers had Zika virus in their blood months after they were infected, because the baby was acting as a reservoir and there was lots of virus in the baby, and it could actually be detected with the mother's blood. So the microcephaly was clearly identified in Brazil, and since Brazil was infected in the spring of 2015, it was essentially 6 months ahead of the Zika spread to other countries in South America that then expanded to Central America and the Caribbean. And as a result, other countries were expected to have microcephaly, but they were expected to have a six-month delay based upon when Zika became widespread in the country, followed by another six-month delay between the time a woman in the first trimester was infected and then gave birth to the baby. And so as a result, you had countries that had lots of Zika, had lots of women that were pregnant, infected with Zika, and for 6 months they were giving birth to babies that did not have microcephaly, because for those 6 months, the babies that were being born were the babies that were infected in the second and third trimester. And that gave rise to this significant misconception between where microcephaly was and wasn't. And Colombia is the example that was widely cited, that Colombia had a very high incident of Zika, although they didn't really start until towards the end of 2015. So it followed the same pattern, that in early 2016, when there was a lot of concern over microcephaly, third-term babies were being born. They didn't have microcephaly. And the Ministry of Health in Colombia said, oh, we've got Zika-infected babies, but we don't have any microcephaly. And then they did the same thing for 3 more months when the second trimester babies were born. And that created the widely held misconception that there was something in the water, or something in the, you know, larvicide, or something in the GMO mosquitoes that was found in Brazil and causing all this microcephaly, and it really didn't have anything to do with the Zika virus. And then microcephaly started to appear in Colombia. And unfortunately, the appearance of the cases in Colombia have not received a whole lot of attention. And that is in part because the numbers are depressed for a couple different reasons. One reason the numbers are depressed is by the time the babies were being born in Colombia from first-term trimester infections, it was widely known about the infections in Brazil, and many of those babies ended up being terminated, so they didn't go to term, because it is possible to see these changes in the baby's brain around 20 weeks, and some mothers elected to terminate as a result of the sonograms and radiological data. But in addition to that, there is a significant lag in the testing in Colombia. So the number of babies with microcephaly did start to go up, and it started to go up fairly dramatically. The background in Colombia was about 3 cases a week, and that was widely cited as what the expectation would be if there was no involvement of Zika in microcephaly there. And the first case was reported about the 14th week of the year. And shortly after that, the number of cases being reported was 2 to 4 times the background. There were 6 to 25 cases that were being reported each week. And then that number increased. It got up to 64 cases a week. And then it's come back down now. It's more in the 25 a week. But the numbers are, dramatically elevated over the background. But unfortunately, the majority of the microcephaly cases in Colombia have not been tested. And then of the cases that were tested, the Zika link there is about half of the rate that was in Brazil. Brazil was getting a Zika link with about 40% of the cases. In Colombia, it's about 20% of the cases. But the numbers are clearly, it's up to 426 now for 2016, and it really, didn't start taking off until about 10 to 12 weeks ago. So the number of cases is significantly above background, and the curve is pretty dramatic, because they were recording cases when it was first getting started, and even then it was above background, but it was 6 to 12 cases, and now it got up to 64 and then a 25. So you could see the increase in the cases in Colombia. Some are still drawing distinctions between the number of confirmed cases. And, it's really not clear exactly what the criteria is to confirm those cases. I think there are up to 38 confirmed cases now. And, again, that's 20% of the ones that they test. And it's very likely that is due to more stringent criteria as far as concluding that it's Zika linked, but simply looking at the number of cases leaves little doubt that the rise in cases in Colombia was due to the Zika infections. And it may very well be that in both Colombia and Brazil that the 60% of the cases that they don't count as Zika confirmed is really more due to what kind of criteria they're using. And Zika might produce a wider range of changes, and some of the subtler changes are not being detected radiologically, and they're being discounted as being Zika, but it may very well be a slightly different presentation, but with the same negative results that result in microcephaly in the first trimester. So the microcephaly story for the virus in the Americas is pretty clear. Another data set really comes from the United States. The United States is up to 22 cases now, 16 full-term babies with microcephaly, and another six of babies that had other they're mostly miscarriages that were, and these are from Zika confirmed women in the United States who basically got infected. At another country, the vast majority of the cases in the United States are not from Brazil, and the number of cases in the pregnancy registry is relatively small relative to the number of cases that that have microcephaly, because in general, there's a little over 600 cases in the registry, but, you know, only a third of them would have been infected in the first trimester. So that would cut down the number of first trimester infections to about 200. And the vast majority of those 200 cases have not given birth yet. So when there's 16 cases, that's likely out of maybe 50 cases, and so it's a very high frequency. It's 20-30% of the ones with known outcomes, much smaller numbers. But Canada has got 15 cases that are infected, and to give you an idea, again, the numbers are tiny, but they've got two outcomes from those 15: one with microcephaly and one without, and so that's 50%. But again, that's of the whole population that have outcomes. It's not just first trimester. So the rate is high. The numbers are low in Canada. The numbers are higher in the U.S. And neither Canada nor U.S. Microcephaly cases are due to travelers that are from Brazil. The vast majority of the cases in both countries come from travelers that had been infected in the Caribbean or had been infected in Central America. So the data indicating there's something unusual about Brazil doesn't extend beyond the fact that the thing that's unusual about Brazil is the cases in Brazil were due to an outbreak that began 6 months before the cases in northern South America, and up to 9 months before the cases in there, or even 12 months before the cases in Central America and the Caribbean, or at least as far as the virus taking off. Now, the sequence data indicates that the virus may not have even initially appeared in Brazil, that after Brazil had published a number of these sequences that went back to March of 2015, the University of Florida looked at some serum samples that had been collected in Haiti in December of 2014. And they found Zika, and one full sequence has been published, two partial sequences have been published, or actually three partial sequences have been published, and all of them are closely related to each other, and all of them are, in fact, somewhat more closely related to the strain from French Polynesia than the Brazil cases. And so as far as actual hard data is concerned, the earliest Zika virus in the Americas, excluding Easter Island, was actually in Haiti. And that was in the end of 2014, about 3 to 4 months before the earliest clinical sample that was Zika confirmed was in Brazil. And there's some, and the sequence data shows there's some variation there, that the versions in Haiti is a little bit different than the version in Brazil. There's other groups that are in Central America and the Caribbean that are slightly different also. But all of them, do kind of trace back to French Polynesia, And they all have there's a couple characteristic changes that they all have in common. So you can distinguish the sequences that came out of the Americas from the sequences that came out of French Polynesia. But what was of interest was there's another version that was circulating in Oceania, and those cases started showing up in travelers that were vacationing in like Samoa or American Samoa, and then ended up going back to China. And so some of the early sequences from China were from the Oceania, and that those sequences are also related to French Polynesia, but they're distinguishable from the Americas. And so they're actually a little bit closer to French Polynesia. Some of those characteristic changes that showed up in the Americas are not present in these other sequences from Oceania. So it's so those sequences are fairly easily distinguished when a phylogenetic tree is generated. That phylogenetic tree is very straightforward. There's lots of software that's available that will generate this phylogenetic tree. The software is widely available. You can download it on the internet. And as long as you take the sequence, it's the same size as the other sequences, and put them in, and then generate the alignment, and then generate the phylogenetic tree, it shows kind of which virus led to which. And these Oceania cases come on a separate branch and can be distinguished from the ones that came to the Americas. They're the Asian strain. They're again closely related to French Polynesia, but they're still distinguishable. And the reason that is of interest is because the recent outbreak in Singapore has caused a lot of concerns, because it is the number of cases went up so quickly, and there are so many clusters. And now the outbreak in Singapore is being spread by travelers to other countries. Taiwan just reported a case that had come from Singapore. Malaysia has several cases that came from Singapore, including a family cluster. Wife who was pregnant, and there's concerns that that there are workers in Singapore from various Asian countries, and there's concern that the virus in Singapore will quickly spread. Sequences out of Singapore have not been made public yet, but reports from the Ministry of Health there has indicated that the virus in Singapore is the Asian strain, but it's distinct from the strain in the Americas. And that raises the possibility that the sequences in Singapore actually are much more like these Oceania cases, which is supported in part by sequences that were released today, that a traveler from Australia had gone to Tonga and had been infected, and then that traveler returned to Australia, and a group in Australia had generated a full sequence from that case, and then they just today are published 10 other sequences that they published, a partial sequence from that same case, another case from Tonga, and then several cases from Oceania, including Cook Islands, which was, they redid a sequence that was from a case from 2014 in Cook Island, but they also had cases, one of which was from Vietnam. And because of the similarities of these cases to the other cases the other sequences out of Oceania, it raises the possibility that that same Asian sequence that was in Travelers to Japan and China and Vietnam may very well have brought the virus or even originated from sequences that were in Southeast Asia and may have in fact seeded the outbreak in Singapore. So it's entirely possible that the virus in Singapore is going to be closely related to this series of partial sequences that were released today, or a few of these complete sequences that came from travelers to China or Tonga. And so, you know, one of the questions is whether this is going to produce the same results as the America, where there is this fairly high frequency of microcephaly, particularly if the mother was infected in the first trimester. And right now the jury is out on actual data from those particular cases because it just started to take off really a week or two ago. Although it's likely that it was present, you know, before that, because it is very widespread, and chances are the infection was there, and people were not really being tested. And then once they got a few positives, and they started ratcheting up testing dramatically, and then found all of these additional cases, which are forming cluster after cluster. So, you know, every day there's another double-digit number of local cases that are being reported, and a subset of those are in existing clusters, and a subset of those, not necessarily a big number, one or two all of a sudden create a new cluster with an earlier case, and then another subset end up being local cases that haven't formed a cluster yet. But at the rate they're going, it looks like these clusters are probably going to merge, and it's going to cover a good portion of the city, particularly the eastern portion of the city is where they're concentrated right now. And so the question is whether they're going to cause the microcephaly. And even though it's not direct data, there is indirect data. And the indirect data really comes from two different sources. One is the 1952 experiments that were cited for the original strain, which was in Africa. And that, on a related note, the microcephaly in Brazil generated quite a bit of interest in looking at exactly how the virus was causing the microcephaly. Several groups had in vitro systems where they had systems to measure changes in various brain cells, progenitor cells, and could use the virus to infect those cells and see what cells in particular were being infected by the virus. Early on, the viruses from Brazil were not readily available, but the virus that was originally isolated in 1947 had been put on deposit at ATC, which is American Type Culture, and as a result, scientists could simply just order that virus, which was MR766, and then use that virus in their experiments. And so many of these recent experiments that were published in 2016 and widely reported by the media as evidence of how the Zika virus causes microcephaly, those experiments were not done with the Zika virus from the cases in the Americas, but in fact were done with the original Zika virus isolated in 1947 out of Africa. And that virus was you know, again shown to be neurotrophic into a target certain progenitor cells. And that's an indication that the ability of the virus to cause microcephaly is really not new. The second piece of data comes from an outbreak in Guinea-Bissau, which is in Africa, it's in West Africa. There are microcephaly cases. There is an outbreak of Zika. And just in the last couple of weeks, it was announced that the Zika in that African country is actually the African strain. And so there, the African strain is not only shown to affect the neuroprogenitor cells in vitro, but it's also found in association with an outbreak in Africa, which is associated with microcephaly. So those data points are suggesting that the virus has always had the ability to cause microcephaly. In Africa, the study of the patients was probably not as robust as they were in the Americas, especially since this big cluster of microcephaly, this big spike in microcephaly cases was found in the fall of 2015 in Northeast Brazil. That generated a lot of interest. Prior to that, as I noted, there hadn't been that much interest, mostly in South Pacific Islands, where there had been outbreaks. And in fact, the microcephaly was not reported for French Polynesia in 2013 when the outbreak was ongoing. After the microcephaly was identified in Brazil, the records of patients that were infected, pregnant patients and births that were associated with either the virus or with the mother recalling symptoms of the virus, those were examined and microcephaly cases were in fact identified. And so the virus was causing microcephaly in French Polynesia before these cases were identified in Brazil. And the same goes for Haiti. Haiti is now reporting microcephaly cases, and they probably have had microcephaly cases, but now the virus is starting to take off, and so they have more. And the sequence from, there's a 2016 sequence from Haiti. It's actually recombinant. It basically has about half of its genetic information from the 2014 sequence and half of the genetic information from a Zika virus that was isolated in Brazil. And so the 2016 version seems to evolve from the 2014 version in Haiti. So the virus has been in Haiti, you know, all along. But as far as taking off and causing the big numbers, that's probably more recent, but now there are more patients that are being identified with microcephaly there, and so that version of Zika was also, you know, implicated with microcephaly and also underreported, which is the case for many of these countries in South America and Central America and the Caribbean, that cases aren't being noticed initially, and the virus moved into those countries more recently, and so these microcephaly cases are just now starting to come to full term, and the impact of the microcephaly is becoming more apparent in some of these additional countries. So just to kind of wrap things up, I've always said the story is in the sequence, and from these sequences, you can see these different lineages of the Zika virus. There's the Asian and the African lineages, but within the Asian, there are at least two different versions that are known, and whether the Singapore virus is a third version or in fact is the sequence that's in Oceania, remains to be seen. Theoretically, those sequences are going to be made public fairly soon. there are, I believe, at least two full, well, I don't know if they're full, but there's two sequences that have been generated from Singapore that are full enough to have the statement made that this is not the virus that's in the Americas. It's the virus that's more akin to the virus that's been in Southeast Asia for a large number of years. Why it's as taking off as dramatically as it is, it's a bit unclear whether that has anything to do with the Aedes aegypti, which seems to be the culprit for most of these Zika cases, and whether there's differences in the target population with regard to related virus prior infections by dengue or chikungunya. The U.S. cases suggest that's not the case, that these are American residents that traveled to these other areas, got infected, and came back. It's unlikely that they have a history of dengue or chikungunya infections, but they are coming back with the virus, and the women that are pregnant and infected in the first trimester are giving rise to microcephaly cases. And it seems fairly easy for these people to also get infected. So the driving force may very well just be critical mass, and that with a large percent of the population that's infected, there's a higher likelihood that the number of people infected will be large. There's probably a high likelihood that many of these people infected may be infected multiple times by multiple mosquito bites over a short time period, and therefore may have a somewhat higher viral load, which could affect both the ability of the virus to cause adverse effects as far as birth defects, and also may increase the viral load that ends up going into mosquitoes, and may allow for the mosquitoes to be infected at a higher frequency. And so this may be due more to critical mass and the amount of virus circulating in humans/mosquitoes, and have very little to do with key genetic changes. It still remains to be seen whether there are dramatic, functional differences in severity of the disease with regard to these different lineages. The fact that the virus has been neurotropic and since 1947, and the fact that there now appear to be microcephaly cases associated with the African version and Guinea-Bissau, are indications that that this may be much more related to the amount of virus and the number of people that get infected, rather than some dramatic changes in the virulence of the virus with regard to adverse effects, such as microcephaly. So we look forward to seeing the sequences that do come out of Singapore, to see how they're related to these sequences that were released today, as well as some of the full sequences out of Oceania that have been released in the last several months, including those out of China.
So, Dr. Nyman, a follow-up question, if I may, I think would be important to address. Now, you mentioned some information about misinformation out there among the scientific community. I just wondered if you could go a little more detail about what some of the issues are in the misinformation in the scientific community.
Yeah, well, the issues of the scientific community really stems largely from comparisons between known cases, such as one good example of that is comparisons of microcephaly in Brazil compared to microcephaly in Colombia. And that was driven largely by the difference in the timing of the outbreaks. The outbreaks in Brazil were significantly earlier. They really began in the spring of 2015, whereas the outbreaks in Colombia were closer to the late fall of 2015. So they really started there 6 months later. And there were these apples to oranges comparisons. The comparisons were to full-term babies from mothers who were infected in the first trimester compared to full-term babies that were infected in the third trimester. The third trimester didn't produce microcephaly. The first trimester did. And scientists were looking at these differences and saying, oh, there must be something going on in Brazil versus Colombia because they have all these microcephaly cases there and they don't have them in Colombia. And, you know, I was amazed that there were as many scientists as they were that were on the internet and in some publications, and they were citing these differences, and the differences really had nothing to do with the virus. It had everything to do with the timing, and the scientists were in fact citing these differences after the CDC had actually come out and published a paper talking about a little calendar that you could use, and you could take a look and say, well, the cases, the microcephaly is going to begin, but it's not going to begin for 6 months after the virus has appeared. And that, you know, if you compare the Zika-infected women in the third trimester with those in the first trimester, you'll see a dramatic difference. And so they just drew the conclusions that, there's something in the water, you know, it's a virus sign, or, some internet rumors kind of came up with GMO mosquitoes that were being used on a very small scale in Brazil, that somehow that those mosquitoes gave rise to the microcephaly based upon the genetic alterations of the mosquitoes leaking into the mother's bloodstream that somehow affected the babies, and it was these genetic alterations that were causing the birth defects, and it was the same thing with the virucides, and in all of those cases, you know, the big argument was that, well, you have all these microcephaly cases in Brazil and you don't have them in Colombia, and therefore it's got to be something in Brazil. So that said, you know, quite a few rumors, which in fact are still circulating today, I mean literally today, that there was one paper that was published, just to give you an idea how these stories have circulated that, again, it came down to Brazil and Colombia. And a paper came out in the New England Journal of Medicine that was on the outbreak in Colombia. And that study really was looking, it said preliminary, and it really had to do with the early cases in Colombia. And when the study that they were using for the publication ended like in March of 2016. In March of 2016 is right about the time when the very first microcephaly cases would appear in Colombia, because the outbreak started in October, November of 2015. So the babies that were born prior to March would have all been born to women infected in the second and the third trimester. And as a result, that paper, that initial preliminary paper, found very little microcephaly in Colombia because the babies with microcephaly hadn't been born yet, because the only babies that had been born when this study terminated were those from women infected in the second and third trimester. And the paper didn't really make a big deal about the lack of microcephaly. It just gave a preliminary result. And really the conclusion was, you know, that infections in the second and third trimester didn't cause microcephaly, which is fully supported with Brazil. That's the reason there was a 6-month lag. The women in Brazil infected in the second and third trimester, it didn't produce microcephaly either. That's why microcephaly showed up in the fall, even though Zika showed up in the spring. So the paper really was not showing any difference between Colombia and Brazil with regard to this lag. And since they terminated the study in March before the first trimester babies were born, they could say something about the second and third. They didn't say anything about the first. So a subsequent paper came out which tried to make the viricide argument, and they used the data from the New England Journal of Medicine and said, oh, there's no microcephaly in Colombia. There are all these babies that are born. And that paper was published, and right about the time the paper was published, then the cases in Colombia started, the microcephaly cases began to appear. And it was unfortunate timing, but the media got a hold of this now a paper that said, oh, there's no microcephaly in Colombia, even though there are all these Zika infections. And that, you know, was widely circulated in the media. And then as soon as the microcephaly cases started to appear in Colombia, I actually tweeted to the author of the paper that said there's no microcephaly in Colombia because the microcephaly in Brazil is due to some larvicide that was in the water. He just let that paper ride. And so that paper got out in the scientific literature, and then just this week, some anti-abortion publication came out and said that, oh, Zika is being overblown. It doesn't cause microcephaly. There's 12,000 cases, babies that were born in Brazil, and none of them had microcephaly. And none of them really referred to the second and the third term, and it really was an extension of this other paper. And so literally today, I'm getting tweeted saying, well, how do you explain the fact that there's no microcephaly in Colombia? And I said, there is microcephaly in Colombia. There's 426 cases. And these cases began as soon as the babies that were infected in the first term, first trimester, started coming to term. And so that myth that was totally based upon looking at data too early and saying there's no microcephaly, when in fact there's no babies born in the first trimester, is literally being bandied about today. And this myth that there's no microcephaly in Colombia is still widely circulated. And those same type of misconceptions goes towards the virus in the Americas. That in the Americas, and again, it goes back to Brazil, there were a lot of cases in Brazil, particularly in northeast Brazil, and that gave rise to the microcephaly, which were then confirmed, although most of them have been confirmed radiologically, not from identifying Zika, because most of the samples, as I mentioned, didn't cause really cerebral spinal fluid. And so there wasn't a good way to identify the virus in the full-term babies, because by then the virus itself had been cleared from the baby. So the virus wasn't there. The antibodies were there, but you needed to collect the cerebral spinal fluid to identify that. Now, that type of analysis wasn't done in French Polynesia, so even though a retrospective study showed that the virus was causing microcephaly in French Polynesia at the time of the outbreak, there was no reports that the virus was, in fact, causing serious illnesses. There were some Guillain-Barré cases, and those were cited, but as far as the microcephaly cases, those were not cited. And the same thing is almost certainly true for Africa. So the virus, the African strain of Zika, in all likelihood causes microcephaly. It has caused microcephaly in the past in Africa, but nobody really looked for Zika virus and the association of microcephaly. So there's this another misconception that the virus in the Americas is much more virulent and causes dysmicrocephaly, whereas the virus in Africa is more benign and doesn't cause the microcephaly. And that's simply a comparison of positive results where testing was done, and it was either done with cerebrospinal fluid or at least radiologically, with cases where there was no testing done. And so they say, well, it's positive in America, it's not positive in Africa, so the virus is different. And the virus actually is different phylogenetically, but whether there's any difference in the rate of microcephaly is unknown because the cases in Africa were not tested. So the, most of the data out of Africa really came from, you know, the virus in mosquitoes and wasn't in the virus in humans. And for the limited number of studies on viruses in humans, there was no studies being done on microcephaly associated with that. So that's a second example of these misconceptions where samples that are tested, you know, patients that are tested and are positive are compared to patients that weren't tested and obviously are negative, or at least there's no known data. And the positive is thought to represent a major difference from the negatives when the negatives are really based upon no testing. So again, this comes down to testing and compare. And unfortunately, there are, you know, many, too many examples where positive results based on testing is compared to negative results based on no testing. And the positive result is cited as evidence that the positive cases are caused by a Zika virus that's functionally different than the cases that weren't tested and caused by, you know, for instance, the African strain. So the prediction is that these comparisons aren't legitimate, and that due to the fact that the virus from Africa was neurotropic way back in 1952, and that virus has also been shown to be neurotropic in these more recent studies that have these more sophisticated in vitro models, the types of, you know, the mechanism of the virus causing the microcephaly and what types of brain cells are infected, that data was not generated with the virus from the Americas. It was generated with the original 1947 virus out of the Zika rainforest in Uganda. So those types of misconceptions by scientists that are citing positive data based on testing versus negative data based on no testing are remarkably common. And kind of fuel these discussions that, you know, aren't real. It's really apples to oranges comparisons. And so the prediction that I would make is that there will, in fact, be microcephaly associated with the virus that's in Singapore. Exactly why it's traveling so rapidly, part of it is due to testing, but part of it may be that, again, in Singapore, it's reached a critical mass, and there's enough humans that are infected that give rise to enough mosquitoes that are infected that then give rise to more humans that are infected. As created, it's reached that mass in Singapore, and it's likely to be exported to these other countries who have workers in Singapore. But as far as microcephaly is concerned, the prediction is that there will be a high rate of microcephaly associated with this Asian version of virus. And if studies are done more rigorously in Africa, that indeed the microcephaly will be found there and it'll be associated with the African strain. And so that all three versions of Zika, the African strain, and the at least two, if not three, versions of the Asian strain, if there's enough virus and enough infections, there will be microcephaly and the rates will be similar. And that's the prediction of the day, based upon the recent sequences that came out in the neurotropism and the and now the microcephaly is starting to show up in Africa.
Okay, well, thank you, Dr. Nyman, for addressing that. I was thinking that that was a very important point about all the misinformation out there, that it's quite even still rampant even to this day. So thank you for addressing that. And thank you for all the other information as well. So for our listeners, our website is recombinomics.co. Please visit for all the latest news and information. That site is updated daily. And thank you and have a good day.